Well, good morning, everybody. Good morning. Good to see everybody this morning. Hi.
Good morning.
So we said today that we were going to begin kind of a three-week segment on dying, death and dying, which is always brings in a ton of new people, as you can see. Everybody loves that topic. But it's important to remember when we talk about death and aging that they're not synonymous, okay? Because death can happen at any age, right? It doesn't belong only to the elderly. But of course, we do know that death is absolute. That's something we all share. We all share birth, and we all share death because it's going to happen to all of us. 100% out of 100% never get out of this world alive, right? So, and it's okay to laugh about that because it's true. Ram Dass said that death is absolutely safe. No one ever fails at it. So I guess that could be comforting. But just like birth, it's universal. And so why we're kind of afraid to talk about it, I'm not sure. Except that it comes with a lot of uncertainty and a lot of doubt and a lot of fears in many, many people. And I'm one of them. I can't say that it's my favorite topic. But it is one that if we're going to be truly sages, we need to begin to think about. Because once we can free ourselves of that fear, then I think we really can begin to live. And live in a really meaningful way. So, you know, it used to be that sex was the big no-no to talk about, and I think death has replaced it in our culture. I think we're more apt to talk about sex than we are to talk about dying. And so we're going to let that go here and not be Victorian about death, just like we're probably not so Victorian about sex anymore. So I'll attempt this joke. I'm not good at jokes, so I warn you ahead of time. But an elderly woman decided to prepare her will, and she went to her priest and she said she had two final requests. First, she wanted to be cremated, and second, she wanted her ashes scattered at Walmart. And the priest asked, "Why Walmart?" And she responded, "Then I'll be sure my daughters will visit me twice a week." So yeah, that's what we can think about, right? So one of the things we want to work on, not today but next time, is our God Forbid book. Rev Zalman in his book, From Aging to Saging, recommends that everybody have a God Forbid book. And you may have a God Forbid book and not know it. But a God Forbid book is an instruction book, probably like a loose leaf notebook, with all the things that you want your loved ones to know, God forbid, you should get terminally ill or die. So it's all the things you want in terms of your living wills and all those kinds of things, which we're going to talk about on the 19th, and also what you want in terms of your funeral or not, or how you want your burial to be. That goes in there. And then anything else that you want your family to know about you or about your living or your dying, that goes in the God Forbid book. And you let people know where that is. So God forbid they need it, they can go and find it. And it really is a gift. I bet all of us have experienced the death of a loved one or the terminal illness of a loved one and not been sure what they would have wanted, or think we know what they would have wanted, but would love to be able to ask them and can't. So it would be, so that God Forbid book is a real gift you give to your family so that they can know for sure that they're following your requests and your hopes for yourself. I saw a hand. Was it yours?
Mine is called Answers.
Okay.
And it's got everything in it.
Good.
Not only about my death, but my financial.
Uh-huh. All of that is great to have in one place. Yeah, so they know.
Sister who died with no will, nothing.
And you know how awful that is. Yes. Yeah. And when we're grieving, we don't need that added burden. It helps to know that we are following the wishes of the deceased, and we don't have to think about those things. We can just go ahead and do them and really do the grieving that needs to get done. That so often in our society we don't do. You know, I think part of the problem in modern America, at least, is that we don't grieve. We just tell ourselves we'll be okay, and we got to get back to it. And we avoid grief, and instead we get back into the swing of life, and we just try to cover it all over. So part of facing our own mortality is grieving our own death and grieving the fact that there are things we have to say goodbye to as well. And so there's a lot to it. But grief is real, and to avoid it, I think, does us physical, emotional, psychological, and spiritual harm.
I was just going to add to this, kind of like as a corollary to the discussion we were having just before we started.
Mm-hmm.
We see this happening all the time at the Apple Store. People have passed away. The family comes in and he goes, "Can you unlock this phone or this computer? It's got everything my mother or my father had." All we can do is erase it. There is no way for us to unlock a device.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have the passcode, the only thing that can be done is everything in it goes away.
Mm.
So, and that doesn't matter if it's a court order mm-hmm. or not. There's no way to do it.
I did not know that.
Mm. Passwords are very important.
So that should go in your God forbid book.
Yes.
Here's how you get in my computer or my phone or whatever. Yeah.
If you have Touch ID, you can always have one of your children add their finger. You can do up to 5 of them to unlock it.
Mm-hmm.
There are a whole host of things like that, but people never think about it. And they've got every photo, every bit of information stored in an electronic device that will do nothing but go away.
Mm.
So, you know, it's all part of that thought process.
Is that true of Androids too?
Some. But Apple's commitment to privacy and security makes it very clear that there is no way we can unlock it without, basically, all we can do is erase it.
Mm.
And that's if you've got an original purchase receipt. We won't do that without that. So it's really, really important to think about the things that you've sealed away in more places than not when you're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's like one of the things we recommend to people with their photographs. Every year, go through your photographs that you've taken. Figure out the really important ones. Print them into a photo book or have prints made. Write information about why that photo was important.
Who the people are, because you may be the only one left that knows who those people are.
That
yeah.
That you hand down, and if something were to happen, you've not lost it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important stuff to think about. It is important, yes.
Interesting. No, I hadn't thought about that and not being able to access the pictures. Yeah. 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 So as we're talking about our own mortality, I'd like to think about the fears that people have about their own death, from no fear at all, I'm just ready and I don't even care and I'm good and it's all right, and when it happens and, you know, good to go, to, oh my God, that can't happen to me. It's not going to happen to me. I'm not going to let it happen to me. I'm going to be the one exception to the rule, and it can't, because I can't deal with it. What I'd like you to come up one by one and do is place yourself on this continuum, somewhere between no fear at all and extreme horror at the thought of your own death, your own death. Give it a thought for a minute, because we don't ponder that a lot. How do you feel about your own death? And just come up and make a mark wherever you feel you are on this continuum. I'll go first. Thank you.
just have to say that I think there's a difference in not fear of death, or fear of death and fear of maybe the illness that precedes death.
Okay, yes,
my
yes.
Hearing aid at home. What are we doing here?
We're putting our place on the continuum of how fearful we are of our own death,
and
going
one.
From no fear at all to extreme fear.
Well, that's up here.
There you go.
I should have brought my hearing aids.
I hear that from my husband all the time. That he should have brought his hearing aids.
I'm not saying illness. You said death.
Death, yes, yes. Okay. Right in the middle. Okay.
Which day do you have?
Yeah, which day is it?
My comment is, I wish I could be here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. Anybody else not get a chance? Okay. All right. Would anybody like to comment on why they are where they are? And I know some people made a distinction between the dying or the illness and the death itself. And so that's a good way to think about it. But we can also broaden and think about the whole process, and then you might change where you are. What did you want to comment?
Well, I don't think there's anything to be fearful of, because life is a continuum. Mm-hmm. It's going from one state to another. Life is. Life isn't. Life is. So when you go from here, you're just going to another chapter. So really, what is there to be fearful of? Because you have faith.
Mm-hmm.
You have hope. And so if you have that, you don't have fear. Fear is vanished.
Love casts out all fear.
It's easy to accept that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I think over a period of years, I thought a great deal about that. I was thinking, well, we go from here and we go from here. It's a journey that we're on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just another step. We're crossing a bridge, you might say, or into another area which we're not familiar with. So it's kind of strange. But if we have hope and faith, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Where we have our heart is unafraid.
Very good. Thank you. Yes.
I would say my fear is, if you look at the whole thing, which is the way I'm looking at it, it is the transition that I fear. I fear a situation where, in reality, I am dead, but my body is still here. Where you're in one of those awful situations in the hospital, family is having to struggle with all of this, death itself, I'm not fearful of that. It's the little bit before it that terrifies me.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, part of it is it's not something I've ever done before. So, you know, I'm going to be in that situation. I'm fearful of embarrassing myself. I'm fearful of loss of dignity, of control, of all those things that are human.
Uh-huh.
It's like get it over with and I'll be okay.
I think that it's going to be an exciting thing to die. I think, you know, I'm looking forward to the next step. I just think it will be really exciting.
That's cool. That's a cool way to look at it. Did you have to work on getting there?
Oh, no.
No, that's just how you... Have you always felt that way, or has it been something that's come...
I didn't always think about death.
Right.
But I think after my oldest son died, and God spoke to me about him, about my son being with him, it made me think about death and what would happen on the other side of the transition. And I don't know what it's going to be, but I think it's going to be a better part of life than what we've experienced here on this earth.
My fear is right after death, I'm not sure that my daughter can find all my passwords and user IDs, but sometimes I can't even find them.
That's why you're going to do your God forbid book. You walked in after we said that, I think. Did you hear about the God forbid book? Okay, one of the things we sages want to try to do is have a God forbid book for our family so they can find all that stuff, yes. But, okay, so family, Family issues after you're gone is a fear. Yeah, some people feel that their family will fall apart when they're gone. Because sometimes there is one person that is kind of the glue for a family and they're kind of holding it together for that. It is, well, you're right, but there are people who fear that that's going to happen. That's a genuine concern some people have.
That it's their problem. Because I personally don't, I'm not afraid on that side. But I am terrified of leaving those I care for alone, uncared for by me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm on both ends of that.
Right, right, right. Not for yourself, but for others is where your fear is.
I have no fear for me. I have total fear for everybody.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Those are, you know, these are all right. We still have control.
Mm-hmm.
We don't control.
Yes. That's right. That's exactly right.
That feeds a little bit into my bucket list, which is a fear that I won't finish the things that I really want to achieve yet. Part of that's okay, but part of it impacts everybody else. And having just cleaned out my mother's house, one of the things that we would like to achieve in the near future, hopefully, is cleaning out our house so that our kids don't have to go through.
Do what you just had to do.
Keeps right into being organized so that they can handle the aftermath.
Yeah.
I think my wife hears that about me dying too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll admit that I'm OCD, but I've made a list. I keep an inventory of all my belongings.
Oh my goodness.
Mm. I said I was okay. And it's a list that's like a will to say, okay, I want so and so to have this and so to have that. Well, there are very few things on the list that I specify who I want to have. But anybody can take that list and see what is there and whether or not it's valuable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe where it came from, because I have several columns.
Mm.
And I realize that that's really, really detailed, but I'm a detail-oriented person.
You are, yes. You know? It works, yeah.
But if you start out with the things that are valuable.
Right, yes.
Compared to all of your stuff in your house, mm-hmm. it's few,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
for the most part.
Right.
Then you can, if you want to, you can add to it, you know, as you go. But I think putting down the valuable things mm-hmm. and the things that you want certain people to have is the most important.
Yeah.
The rest of it can go by the wayside. Say, just say on your file, on your piece of paper, whatever. Do with it what you want. You know, have a party, divide it up, give it to the resale shop, mm-hmm. and whatever you want to do, but I want so-and-so to have this,
mm-hmm.
and so-and-so to have that. That's easy.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
part of that.
A total inventory.
It's part of that gift. Mm-hmm.
I realize.
Mm-hmm.
But doing just the important things is easy.
Yeah, and I like the idea that you're giving permission for people to do what they want to with it. One of the things that happened when my mother died, I'm an only child, so I got everything. She didn't have a lot because she had come to live with us and we had pared out a lot of things, but she had a few good pieces of furniture that meant a lot to her and just some things that, you know, jewelry and things like that. And she's been gone since 05, and I have a hard time parting with anything, even though I don't need it or really have a place for it, because it was hers, you know. And I know I can hear her saying, don't be so stupid. You know, I didn't care about that stuff when I was alive. Why are you holding? But I wish she had said that to me. And then she did about other things, but she, yes, I would love permission, because I feel like I'm giving her away, you know, and that's hard. I have dishes. I have silver. I never take out of the box.
Dishes.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't been eaten on by a human for 100 years.
Right, right. And my kids don't want any of this stuff. They don't want any of my collectibles. You know? So I'm not doing them any favors by holding on to them either. So millennials don't want any of that stuff, I don't think.
So. Well,
yeah, yeah, or have an estate sale while you're still alive or something, you know?
Mm-hmm. the value is on the spiritual aspect.
Right.
If you have some material objects that I've collected over the years in the military and other places, well, they're just objects. And I remember things, and so I have a journal. Maybe I write something about that particular item in a journal.
Mm-hmm.
But the actual material thing is different.
It's the memory that goes along.
It's the memory. It is. It's the memory. Yeah. Yeah. It's feeling like you're close to the person because you're close to that thing that was close to them.
As grandparents, we end up being the storage unit.
Yes. Yes.
Things that, that came from our grandparents.
Right.
That we hope our grandchildren
will want.
Will want. You know, just really antique things that are quite valuable because of their age.
If they don't want them, then it's their problem. That's true. Other fears that you might have or that you know others have about dying or death?
Mine deal with the illness that I have. I watched my dad with lung cancer struggling for breath. And knowing what I've got, that's probably unless something else takes me, going to be what's going to happen. I've always lived in fear of suffocating.
Okay. Struggling for breath. Okay.
So that's why I'm walking down the left.
Others. Yes.
I have some concerns about what Judgment Day is going to look like. And we don't really talk about it that much. The Catechism says, what do we mean by the last judgment? And the answer is, we believe Christ will come in glory and judge the living and the dead. What the hell is that? I mean, my idea is that we're going to have the judgment day is that, yes, we're all going to be redeemed, but we're going to have a level of consciousness so that we see every action, how it affected everybody else. And I think that it's extraordinary. We're going to be extraordinarily vulnerable and subject only to Christ's mercy in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be terrifying.
Mm-hmm. I think that's my definition of purgatory. I haven't thrown out purgatory,
right. But
I don't think it's a jail sentence that people can pray me out of. I think it's that experience
it's
of
right?
it's purging me of all that stuff that I thought I was, you know, a bag of chips and,
I mean, the
and all that, and I wasn't.
Everything that we do affects everyone.
Uh huh. And we're just gonna see it.
We're gonna be able to see it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. One of my favorite and least favorite passages in the Bible are the same passage, and it's when Matthew's talking about Jesus saying, you know, put the sheep's on one side and the goat's on the other. And you were a sheep when you did this and you were a goat when you... Well, I've been a goat probably a lot more times than I've been a sheep. I only want to remember the sheep, but I've got a lot of goat in me, and I think most people do, and we should be aware, you know, we're goats in sheep clothing. And you know, the sheep clothing's going to come off on Judgment Day, and we're going to be the goats we've been. And it's going to be God's love and mercy that's going to say... You know.
But we're going to have...
I think we will now. I think it's part of... Yeah.
I love that wonderful image in C.S. Lewis's The Last Battle, Chronicles of Narnia, where it's the analogy to the Day of Judgment. And there's this little gate that all the animals are streaming through. And on one side of the gate is Aslan, the great lion. And as they come through the door, they stare him in the face. And in their own heart, they hear one question. Do you love me?
Mm-hmm.
And depending on their answer, they went to one side or the other. But it was in their own heart that the judgment took place.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is a wonderful image of that whole moment. Because it goes back to what you were saying. It is the understanding in purity of the result of us in the pure light of God.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess the great Christian hope is that we know that it is by God's mercy alone, not us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think ego gets stripped away.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when we come face to face with who we are and the love of God that is unconditional. It'll be a time when we meet unconditional love for the very first time. True and unadulterated, unconditional love.
Unlike Jesus and Peter on the beach, when he
confronts me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a duty of love.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Completely aware. Utterly aware.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that can be a terrifying question if you're ambivalent.
That's
fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yep.
If there is such a thing as purgatory or that interim period between death and being with God forever, that it's going to be like, and you men won't understand this, but it's going to be like giving birth.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a great deal of pain for a period of time, but once that's over, we forget the pain.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah. Definitely. And of course there's no time once we pass into death. So we all talk in constructs about time, but in reality there won't be time. So it won't be like a minute or a week or a month. It'll just be an experience, and it'll just sort of happen. You know, but that's where the hope and the faith comes in. That's where your idea of hope and faith are critical.
As a soul personality, where we nourish our soul during our mortal existence so that when we go through this transition,
mm-hmm.
we're already in a soul existence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so there's nothing to worry about because this mortal existence is just what it is, mortal. We go through all trials and tribulations, but being that we're primarily soul individuals, if so many don't recognize that. We don't recognize our soul personality.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if we recognize that that's what we are, it's an easy transition because, hey, this is a great, that's wonderful. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now I don't know what it's like, I don't know, but I'm not fearful of it.
Right.
I think it's a matter of open arms, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
What does Leo Buscalia say? He says, love is open arms. You close your arms to love, you're left holding yourself. We don't want to leave holding ourselves. We want to advance into that soul life. Hey, tiptoes of tulips or whatever.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Whatever. You don't know what's there, but if you have that knowledge now,
mm-hmm.
and if you live now at the soul level, which is very difficult to do.
It is difficult.
But I think that's really, in my view,
mm-hmm.
my humble view, and that might not pertain to everyone.
Well, I think that's wisdom, though. I think that what you're talking as a sage, you're talking as someone who has pondered this in the course of your life through those experiences that you've had, and this is how you've come to understand, and that's a beautiful gift that you're giving all the rest of us.
You build all these experiences up, and you benefit, but you not only build them up in you, you use that for the benefit of others while you're here,
mm-hmm.
and that increases your,
yes.
your soul.
Yes.
Whatever,
mm-hmm.
and then hey, well,
kind of
jump over that.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
to
yeah.
So in my view, and it's not an easy concept for me.
No, it's something you've come to
slowly.
Yes, you've come to it. Yes,
it came across very slowly over a period of a lot of years for me to realize that maybe that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great
mm-hmm.
mystery.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just at the beginning of working through a mystery.
Oh yeah.
What happens when I get there with my wife and my fiance?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Somehow I think there'll be unity. There's a unitive nature to this next life, I believe. Not the disunity that we have not right now, but a unitive, a oneness, a being one with. In a way that we don't experience on earth. That's one of the things that, you know, people say, well, I'll see my family or I'll see my mother. I think, yes, but not in the way we see people here. I think it will be a sense of oneness with all that has been and all that is and all that will be. That's how, you know, I look at it. Karl Rahner, some of you may have read or heard of him. He's a Catholic theologian, Jesuit. Back in the 60s and 70s, I think he wrote. And he talked about the process of dying. And he was big on ecumenism in that all faiths, whether you believed in Jesus or not, could come to heaven, or whatever heaven is. And, you know, so he talked about how as we die, his vision was that we would come face to face with goodness, with love personified, love eternal, the essence of love as God, or whatever you called that being. And in coming into that presence, we would recognize where we've been and what we've done and how we have been loving but also unloving, and that there would be that process of purgation, of being cleansed, of being fully forgiven and move into. And he kind of said, once you're in that presence, if you've had any sense of love in your life, even if you've lived a horrendous existence, even if you've done terrible things, when you're in that presence, there's always that opportunity to say yes to it. Even if you've said no all of your life. He held out the possibility that if you've said no so emphatically, that you've kind of denied any goodness, that you could, even in the presence of that great love, continue to say no. And then that would be hell. But that the chance of you doing that because you're in this overwhelming love was probably in his mind quite minuscule. And so most people, when faced with the unconditional love of God, undeterred by this world, would recognize the love and want it and would be accepted.
You touch on one of the things most fearful for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
The rules that we live by really don't apply. All the stuff that we use to categorize people, categorize ourselves, what's moral, what's immoral, what's right, what's wrong. Jesus spent his short life teaching us that all of that goes
out the window.
Out the window. And that one thing and one thing alone lives. The great unconditional hunger and love of God for us. And I think that makes us really terrified because we're people of the rule book.
Mm-hmm.
We love being able to separate sheep and goats. And really, that's God's job.
Yeah, and we judge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we love playing with that. And in an age where the tree of knowledge is something we sip from every second of our life, we spend our time playing God's role in judging. And letting go of that and being vulnerable and being completely in a state of surrender to that love is highly foreign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One last fear I wanted to mention for me is not being able to say goodbye. Death coming in such a way that I don't get to say those things I want to say to people. So, you know.
I've already told you.
Just keep saying it, right?
My Peterbilt.
All right. You're just going to get run over by a Peterbilt. You have to be a farmer to know what that is. Okay, so if you look at this list of our fears, I think one of the things, and I think someone over here already mentioned it, these are things that are pretty much out of our control, aren't they? We fear the things that are out of our control because we like to think we're in control. And in life we are in control, or we can act like we are, over at least some things that happen to us. But death is that uncontrollable, unknown, and therefore fearful thing. But there are things that we can control, even about our death. What might some of those things be? What can we do to lessen the fear and to be in control? I think you mentioned being in touch with our souls.
Huh? Well, I think it's becoming aware of who we are.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I think sometimes we're not aware of who we are. We're not aware that we have the ability to change things because of the Holy Spirit,
mm-hmm.
the grace
mm-hmm.
of God, walking the walk, talking the talk. I mean, living the life of Christ, truly, and that's very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
It's a narrow path.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I know. I certainly know that I'm not anywhere near there. But at the same time, I know that I can go there and I can try my way.
Mm-hmm.
And see if I might make it. I probably won't, but maybe I will.
Yeah. One of the most misunderstood aspects of John Wesley's teachings is that he would say that we needed to all be on the road to perfection He called on all Christians to be perfect, like Matthew's gospel, be perfect even as your heavenly Father is perfect. And most people will say, well, you can't be perfect. But he said, yes, you can. And here's how. He said, you can be perfect in love. And what he meant by that was you can so love God with your whole mind, soul, and all that, first commandment, you can so love your neighbor that it would become inconceivable for you to knowingly choose to do anything that would be hurtful to God or neighbor. You may make mistakes. You may act in a bad way because you didn't realize what you were doing. But you get to the point where you would never harm another person or God intentionally. And people, and I think that's true. I know a lot of people who would never allow the end to justify the means.
Oh, yeah.
And I think our culture is one in which if we have a good end, like it's going to make me $1 million, that's a good end. I can do anything I want to get there. You know, and I think that if we have God as our end, and that we will only take those means that are loving and caring, then we're perfect in the sense of holiness, in the sense of being holy as God is holy.
We have to listen to other teachers, and we don't know it all. I remember, if I might tell a story.
Please.
I went to a Methodist church in Spokane, Washington in 1947, shortly after I got out of the war, and I'd never been to a Methodist church, but his name was Noel Roque. He was a minister. And he said, I'm going to talk about banana peels. Banana peel. Well, it taught me a lesson. He said, you've got to pick up a banana peel because somebody else might slip on it. To this day, I pick them up. I mean, we learn from people.
Uh-huh.
We just don't dismiss those things. It makes such an impact on me. Like one of my teachers said, you never write XMAS. To this day, I shudder when I see XMAS. Well, I think we learn, and then we shift it all through our own
right.
intelligence
mm-hmm.
to come up with something at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can't just discard everything and make a say, well, that's not true. We can't make a judgment. We have to just take it all in and then shift it out ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nancy, did you have something you wanted to add?
I don't know what part of this. I think, for me, this last year, I've been in a grief process about losing the last of my siblings, because I'm the last one. I have two sisters and a twin brother, and it's been a real journey for me. But it has given me the gift of time to review my life.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've come to understand, and this is added into it today, is the job of old age is to resolve those issues
mm-hmm.
that have been issues and to get ready for death.
Mm-hmm.
And I really feel that today.
And that is part of a gift of being allowed to get old or having that opportunity to get old mm-hmm. is that we have the opportunity to do some of this work, which you just can't do when you're 30. You just can't because that's not where you're at.
No.
And nor do you belong there. You shouldn't have to do it then. But it is our job to do it. Now it's our job to help those who are 30 to hear it. Be that person that gives you that lesson about the banana peel, even if you can't accept it or understand it or fully utilize it until much later down the road. You've heard it. It's become part of who you are. So we don't not share with young people just because they're not ready. We share it in the hopes that they will remember when they are ready and get that benefit. But I do want to remind us all that these are the things that are out of our control. But the important thing, and I think the thing that the people who are able to say they're over here may have already done, is dealt with some of the things that we can control. Like our God Forbid book. That's a way of controlling what we can control. If we're fearful that these things will happen, like Al said, he won't be able to, he'll be lying on tubes and everything in a hospital room, really dead, but being kept alive. That God Forbid book that includes a DNR can help keep that from happening. And so there are some things that we can do to lessen the fear and bring ourselves more here. Things that we do have control over. Probably don't have time to go through a list of those today, but you might think about those this week and maybe think about, are there some that you haven't done yet that you could do so that you could move if you were on this side further over here? Because it's nice to be over here. Because then you can truly live, right?
I might be,
we could be all over the lot depending on the day. But even if we get a glimmer of it over here, it's kind of nice, right? Even if we can spend a few minutes without fear, it's a gift. Yeah. So if you're worried about the people that you leave behind, are the things you can do and probably are doing to make sure that they have what they need. And that's, you know, that can possibly bring you this way a little bit.
I believe that when you love your family, your kids, like this, it's always about, you know, as much as you can while you're alive. They will always feel the love. They will always remember Grandpa, great-grandpa, however old you get to be. They'll always remember that love, and they'll remember your wisdom that you've passed to them, or your whatever that relationship is. I don't think you have to, I mean, well, I think you're not meant to be immortal.
Yeah, I think that's one of the fears you could put down, too, is the fear of being forgotten.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, you're not going to be forgotten. If you have a relationship with your children and your grandchildren, and then if you live long enough to have great grandchildren, they're all going to remember you.
Yeah, yeah.
Very, very short time I had with my grandparents, I still remember. Mm-hmm. And the last one died when I was, 12, but three of them had died by the time I was 6.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I still remember them.
And I remember my great grandmother, and I'm working on genealogy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's so she's not forgotten.
No.
For me.
Right.
That's a very valid fear for a lot of people.
Yeah, and you know, that's very Jewish in some ways, because that's why they name children after relatives who have passed, because they believe in that continuum of life and that continuum not to forget the past. Because even those in Judaism who don't have a sense of heaven, they believe we go on in our
continuity.
In our the continuity of life goes on in our offspring.
Originally,
yes.
I had some Mormon missionaries come to my door. And they taught me one lesson. I said, God gives us memories that in the December of our lives we may have June roses.
Ah, beautiful. June roses. That's beautiful.
Memories that in the December of our lives we may have June roses. So that's an important thing.
I love that.
Philosophy, but that's one thing that I picked out.
Mm-hmm.
Memories are important.
They are very important. And I love the genealogies and the ancestry.com and all those ways of carrying it on so you can send it on.